This is Heroin Addiction, presented by That Time I Got Reincarnated in the Same World as an Anime Podcaster, where we cover romance and drama manhwa, and if it's not from South Korea, then it's just sparkling manga. I'm Isekai Sensei-sama, aka Brad, and as always I'm joined by Bento Baggins, aka Ben.
A mysterious, suit-clad male lead with, like, I guess I should have the silver hair because I have long hair.
So today, we're covering A Talented Maid. As always, I'll read the summary here, and then we'll get into the discussion. As Marina, she's on the run as the last of her kingdom's royal line. Disguised as Marie, she is just a maid serving the vicious empire. She's never been very good at anything, so when she's told to make a wish, she asks for the ability to help others and bring them happiness. Now, as visions of brilliant and skilled people fill her dreams, she's imbued with a bounty of abilities perfectly suited for any dilemma. But will her secret last as the Crown Prince seeks out both Marina and Marie? So, yeah, Talented Maid. This is one of the first manhwa that I started reading years ago when I started getting into these, and I always thought it was pretty fun. It's relatively low stakes, or I think maybe a better way to put it would be faux stakes.
Oh, that's a good phrase to coin. I like that,
because there's definitely things that are sort of the story sort of wants you to see as dramatic and like, oh, this is a big deal and everything, but there's sort of never any actual consequences for any of the bad things that happen. All of the bad stuff happened before the story started.
Yeah, you never really believe that she's in danger. I mean, there's a couple of times at the beginning when you don't really know who the Crown Prince is, like what his deal is.
They get rid of that pretty quickly for the reader anyway. They show very quickly like his inner thoughts and things of like, oh, he's not really, what is his, they call him the Blood Prince or something like that.
Yeah, it's cheesy.
It's like, oh, you know, she saw him in the fires of war. So of course, you know. That's scary. Yeah, but like
the whole story hinges on a misunderstanding that her family was the Cloyan nobility,
the royal family. She was the, not the princess, because there was a bunch of them. But
there's,
like,
there's a chunk of land that sits between two empires. There's an East Empire and a West Empire.
Yeah,
and her family controlled that chunk of land. They're kind of fighting over. And the Crown Prince took it over by force. And her family was a bunch of assholes.
Yeah.
And she was the token at this point in my Otome Isekai journey. she was the token bastard princess,
yeah,
or whatever, who her mother was a commoner. And she died, and so now her father has to raise her, but everybody treats her bad.
By the way, how does that happen? I want to know, because this happens in so many stories. Mm-hmm. How is it that the king has a tryst with a commoner? The king, okay? Like, how does he get out of the palace by himself and, like, spend enough time... I mean, and I realize it could be a one night stand, but like spend enough time with a commoner to like,
it definitely happened. Like, I think the, like Robert Baratheon in Game of Thrones is definitely based on actual events, but like he frequented brothels, and he, you know, as he traveled for his campaigns,
but that's
he
would also
stop
like
stop at every camp.
And that kingdom and nobility structure from Game of Thrones is significantly different.
It doesn't
from the
map
ones,
on to.
Yeah.
No, but nobody in Game of Thrones wore a suit and had like a writing desk. And
right. Like the nobility that we see is very much the kind of like, you know,
almost like late 1800s.
Yeah. Where it's like, oh, you know, the royals aren't allowed to leave the palace without like a huge escort and everything. Although the prince did that one time, but you know, they made a big deal out of it.
What I have a harder time believing is not that he sired a child, but that he heard that the mother had died and was like, oh, well, I'm the next of kin. I guess I got to take care of them.
I think in that
wouldn't
instance,
you just, like, even if you cared, like in an instance of a king who cared, which doesn't like comply with the situation she finds herself in where everybody hates her and they send her to the Cinderella Tower. And, but if the king cared, you'd be like, yeah, you could go stay with the estate. Like I've got like a, somebody that'll foster you.
I think that is the part that makes sense to me, because in these, situations, the children that are not direct heirs, like the women can't take over as the head kind of thing, they're used as resources. Like I'm gonna marry her to this family and that way I get their support. It's a way to build connections like that. So having just some extra kids that you can just be like, here, take one of my kids, and now you have to give me money or your support or whatever. Like that's realistic to me that the king would be like, oh, I accidentally had a kid over here. I better keep an eye on this. And then I can use her at some point. And presumably he wouldn't have brought her in if the mom hadn't died, unless they got to a point where they needed, someone to marry off.
Well, because that's a thing, too.
And at which point they would have been like, oh, hey, go grab that kid. That's an extra one we have. Bring him in here.
One day we'll have to do an episode on just the tropes. Just the tropes and, like, what inspired them. Because at this point, it's inspired by 50,000 other Otome isekais. Like the historical grain of truth is so mutated at this point that I can't even decipher. But what matters for this story is she is that token bastard princess, and now she is in this royal family that hates her. So this duke comes in and kills that royal family.
Prince.
Or oh man, I'm too deep into these now. It's the Duke of the North comes in. I'm used to him being the violent one. No.
No, he can't be the Duke of the North. He's got blonde hair.
He's got blonde hair. yes, everybody knows people from the extreme north of the world have very dark hair.
Yeah. So what little sunlight they get can warm them up.
Yeah. He comes in, he kills everybody, and he's looking for her, and he's, you know, covered in blood. He's like, where is the princess? Where are the drugs going? Where is she? And she thinks he's looking for her to finish off the family. She's the last one.
Is definitely, that makes sense that she thinks that. He does nothing to persuade anybody otherwise.
Better safe than sorry. I would not run into that situation going, I'm here, sir. But a bunch of people help her get out. And we find out that they help her get out and disguise her as a maid. She gets captured as a prisoner of war and forced to serve. But she's alive. She's treated fairly well. Got a roof over her head, food to eat. So they helped her because she established herself as something of a hero of the people. She used her little influence to, you know, help the poor and feed the starving. And
I do. So I believe she was only a princess for a couple years.
Yeah.
Before the kingdom got destroyed. Destroyed is probably not a good word. They killed all the royals. Got
destroyed. Yeah.
There was a war, so a bunch of soldiers died. But as far as we know, they absorbed the kingdom into the empire and are like trying to take care of its people. But I did, when they got to the part where they were explaining how she would like buy medicine for the poor and sick, and like it would send out her maid to do this stuff. I was sort of wondering, like, how exactly? First of all, how did she have money? I would have to assume they gave her a stipend or whatever, but you'd think it would be small since they're like sequestering her away, sort of hiding her. And then like, also, how did anybody find out? Did the maid just go around telling people, oh, this is from Princess Morina?
Well, she might've told people that people might've known around town that the maid worked for Princess Morina.
Yeah, maybe.
Like if she was, yeah, so one of the interesting things about this, not an isekai.
No. So, however,
checkmate, you're not allowed to like it.
However, the fact, and we didn't quite get to this part yet, but the fact that she is receiving dream powers from people that appear to be either from other worlds or from in the future or something like that.
Oh, this is it's tenuous.
Leaking. It's leaking.
This is tenuous at best. So it definitely vibes with it, though. I heard somebody discussing the other day how like Blink 182 is not technically emo music, but if they appear at an emo festival, everybody knows the words. It's just one of those things that's like adjacent enough.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, this fits. It definitely fits the vibe. But yeah, one of the issues I have with the story that's going to come up again and again is like the pacing is really weird.
Yes.
And there's a couple of things that it seems like the author had not figured out until the middle of the series.
Well, and I would wonder, because some of the pacing stuff, you'll get to the end of a chapter and then you go to the next chapter and go, wait a minute. Did I skip something here? Because they sort of just go, and yada, 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 and here we are. And that's not necessarily a bad thing sometimes, but it happens enough, and it, like, you think of, like, it's in your face enough that you go, like, huh, I wonder if I missed something here. And I wonder how much of that is from the original light novel versus the adaptation of it.
I would guess a lot, because what I've seen with some of the light novels I've been looking into, I've mentioned it on the main podcast, is these things start as web novels that are like just for fun projects. Somebody sees potential in it, offers to publish it, then the author goes back and cleans it up a bit for publication. But the extent to which they rewrite is largely dependent on their time and how much anyone cares. So, as you're writing a web novel, the process of writing a web novel is you produce a chapter or a couple of chapters, you post it, you get a bunch of comments. It would be silly to think that those comments don't influence you in some way. I mean, obviously you have your outline, but you get, unlike somebody who's writing a novel whole cloth to publish and release to the world, you get feedback from your audience right away, and you can tell like if they're absolutely not connecting to what you were trying to do. You can fix it.
Is John Bierce writing web novels?
That's an interesting thing. Like the progression fantasy lit RPG, that is like the masculine side to the Otome isekai.
Yeah.
But
Go listen to Words About Books. We're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about books, but that might explain some of the weird pacing, because I get the vibe that there was an idea and the idea evolved with the story. Mm. Like, specifically the character of the Crown Prince, because he goes for, what did Witten Moon call this? A marshmallow or something? What do they call the guys? What do they call?
I don't think the Crown Prince could be a marshmallow.
No, but I don't think he's a marshmallow. But he starts off as like that, like alpha male, slightly dangerous, slightly possessive. Like, he's like, don't you touch what's mine.
Okay. So I was thinking about this when I was rereading this. There's a point where, so they establish pretty early on that he's got insomnia, right? He sleeps very little. Sometimes he doesn't sleep at all.
I did think about that. Yeah.
And then there's a point where Marie helps him to sleep. And he, like, starts sleeping fairly normally after that.
Because he's no longer insane.
Well, and I'm wondering, there's actually another manhwa that is over now that I read, where the entire premise of it is that the tyrant emperor is a tyrant because he can't sleep. And so the female lead who goes into the palace to be the empress has a special power that when she kisses him, he's able to fall asleep. And that turns him to not into a tyrant anymore. However, I was rereading this, and there isn't really a clear point where they're like, look, he's better now because of this. But they do sort of,
if they're going for that, it's very subtle. Yeah. And like, it did occur to me that he might have been slightly psychopathic because he wasn't sleeping.
Yeah.
And he does have this single-minded focus on, I'm going to fix the empire. Like, his whole character is that he did this bloody rebellion, like kind of like a pseudo-rebellion.
There was a war first. Yeah,
a civil war.
Where the first war was with the Cloyan Kingdom, right?
Right.
And then,
did they count that as a civil war, though?
No, that was not the civil war.
Oh, they're a third country?
After that, yeah, the Cloyan Kingdom was separate. And then a year or two after that, because the emperor went into a coma, there's a lot of infighting about who's going to be the crown prince. Because traditionally, the king has to name the crown prince and then abdicate to them. But because the king had not done that, is in a coma, so he's not dead, but he also hasn't, you know, named the successor. There's this question up in the air of, like, who's going to be the crown prince? So there's a whole family, right, of, you know, there's lots of princes. There might be a princess or two, or it might have just been the one princess who was murdered years earlier. I'm not clear on that, but there's definitely other princes. And so that's where the civil war comes in. So a year or two after the Cloyan Kingdom War, there's a civil war, and Prince Raleigh kills all of his brothers except for one, the youngest one.
Mm-hmm. So where I was going, he seems like the War of Succession. That seems to be the one that, like, really messed with him.
Yeah.
So he feels guilty about what he had to do. And he's trying to set everything right. And he's got this single-minded focus that the only way he can live with what he did is if he dedicates his every moment to fixing the empire.
Yeah.
And it's kind of turned him into a monster. Like, he's doing good things, but he's doing them so, I don't know, recklessly or authoritarian.
Yeah, it's really interesting because everyone around him is like, oh, he's great, he's so nice and everything, but also we're scared of him.
Yeah.
And they've never, like, the worst thing he does to any of his own, like, citizens or nobility or anything is, like, berate them. We've never seen him actually, like, harshly punish any of them. There's just the implication that that is possible and will happen if you cross a line.
Well, I think there was a thing where he was, like, the fourth brother or something. Like, he was not supposed to be the crown prince. If they had followed the law, he should have deferred to his older brothers. But they sucked. I think that's where they're going with this. And he decided he was going to go against the law to murder them all. He spared the innocent one. Because the kid, a lot of people think he should kill the kid too. Because the kid is a competitor.
Yeah. Okay. I was trying to remember, because it wasn't entirely clear everything that happened in the Civil War. However, one thing that they did state specifically was that he was not going to be close to, you know, first in line for succession because his mother was a concubine. That's
right.
The empress. Whereas his younger brother, Oscar. Oh, they have something
in common. I didn't even put that together. Yeah,
his younger brother, Oscar, who he spared, was the son of the empress.
Yeah, he has a more legitimate claim.
Is the empress still alive?
I don't think so, because Oscar's pretty much... we haven't seen her if she's alive.
Well, we also haven't seen the emperor, but we know he's alive.
He's just a vegetable. Yeah.
Maybe the empress just stays by his side all the time. Who knows? What we do know is that there was a civil war. Prince Raleigh killed everybody else except for little Oscar. And now he is running the empire as the crown prince. He has yet to take the final step that would make him the emperor, which is to kill his father, who is in a coma. If he does that, he can be 100% in charge.
But there are reasons not to do that.
Right.
Because it would start, like, the emperor still has the most militarily powerful family loyal to him. And if he did that, yeah, it would start another war that he could probably win. But again, is that what the country needs? Right. So he's a good guy. He's a bad guy with a heart of gold.
He's a good guy in a bad situation.
He's a bad boy with a heart of gold. And the reason I mentioned that, like, that whole backstory, is because unlike a lot of Otome Isekai we've read, this one has, like, a plausible love triangle.
Yes.
A love quadrangle. A love square.
So only... the extra corner there is only really there. It would only be there by force.
It's not a perfect square. Like, one corner is, like, just a little too close to the others.
Yeah.
But there's...
It's a triangle with four sides.
It's a triangle with four sides. I like that. So, it's interesting because this isn't, like, a super romance-heavy Otome Isekai.
No, and we're going to have to discuss that a little bit more in depth when we get to... doing the rating and the rubric for this.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts. Rena made some good points.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing, though, is at the beginning, like, the crown prince sucks. He's possessive and controlling, and he really speaks about her like she's a possession. He can move her wherever he wants. You don't like him.
Yeah, yes and no. Yes, because in any kind of realistic setting, yes, that would be weird and gross and you don't like it. But also, it's also sort of true because she's a prisoner of war. Like, it's weird because the prisoners of war are not slaves. However, they are owned by the emperor. And it's, well, like,
it's kind of like how prisoners aren't slaves, but you can force them to work and not pay them.
Yeah.
It's slavery.
Which is slavery, yeah.
Yeah. So, I'd agree with you that it's the romance novel logic, except there is an alternative presented, which is Captain Silverhair.
A very good alternative, yes. In fact. Kielhan de Satan. Satan. I don't know how to say that properly to not make it sound like Satan.
So the satanic kielbasa comes in, and he is the, like, knight, the captain of the Imperial Guard or something.
Yes, also a marquis. And also,
yeah, so he's like super important, and he's a really good fighty guy, but he is a marshmallow. I'm going to use that term correctly one of these days.
I would, yeah. I think you could describe him as a marshmallow, because as opposed to the crown prince, who you know has a good side, you can see it sometimes. You can definitely get it from his inner monologue. With Kiel, he's always like that. Even when he's having a very difficult discussion with the crown prince about possibly having to, like, try and kill each other, he's still very much like, I don't want to do this.
I don't want to hurt you, my brother in arms.
But
if
also,
you died, I would kiss your forehead. But and Brad, he's good with kids. He takes care of the kid. He follows him around. He's the kid's best friend. He plays with him.
Oscar.
Yeah, she bakes him cookies, and he loves the cookies, and he's like, she bakes him cookies, and then he's like, for this minor service of having baked me cookies and hung out with me at this weird pavilion, we are now friends for life, and I will give you, like, a Chewbacca life debt. You just call me whenever you're in trouble, and I'll just kill whoever is bothering you.
He's very open with his feelings.
Yeah.
For the most part. Which is a juxtaposition to the crown prince, which is why I think for the first series we've read for this, he might actually be a true second male lead.
Yes.
Which I don't think we've really had before.
I have not encountered one. I've encountered ones where there are, like, other reasonable hot dudes that she could go for, but they either come in so late in the story, or they're too, like, best friendy with the main lead,
or they're like, lead. She doesn't see them that way, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas, it's not plausible. But in this one, it's like, girl, if you go for that crown prince, you're nuts. Like,
so we should clear something up story wise before we get into this, which is the crown prince is looking for Princess Morina to marry her, because he's taken over this area that was the Cloyan Kingdom, but the people there are still wary of him. They're not loyal to him because he murdered their royal family.
And probably a large number of them, as the royal family called them to arms. Yeah.
If he marries Princess Morina, he will secure loyalty from the people of that region because they already liked her. Because she was already, like, a saint to them because of the stuff that she did. Now, absolutely no one knows that Marie is Princess Morina. As far as we know so far.
Well,
there's presumably some maid or maids somewhere that know it, but we don't know where they are.
The house staff smuggled her out.
Right. And the only picture of her was burned. So during the war, so no one knows what she looks like.
That I suspect, just based on the way that it's written, it's not going to go this way. But, like, I'm kind of nervous that, how does she prove she is who she says she is?
Well, she doesn't want to for one.
But when it comes time for the reveal, how does she prove it? Like, somebody's going to have to be there to verify. Like, either the maid who smuggled her out or something.
I don't know. It might just be the crown prince is like, yep, uh-huh, you're right. I'm going to decree it, that that's definitely who you are.
I'm surprised that thought hasn't occurred to him.
What was I thinking?
She's from the Cloyan Kingdom. She's a saint.
So there's, it's so funny because what are we at now? Chapter 59.
59.
We are very deep into this. A lot of stuff has happened. She has been given a title by this point. So she's been freed of her prisoner of war status and then immediately given a title so she can't escape. And all of this time, all of the comments on Bato are like, oh, this is taking forever. When are they going to reveal her to be the princess so we can actually have romance and whatnot? It's like that's
when the story ends. Yeah. But I do agree with them that it's not a satisfying, it's not a satisfying arc.
I don't
recently, like within the last, I want to say 10 chapters, has she started to hint that she is reciprocating romantic feelings?
Yeah, she's definitely. So the Crown Prince is sort of going, oh, I think about her all the time, but I can't. I need to do what's best for the Empire. I need to pick one of these two bitches to be the Crown Princess, even though they're terrible. But I keep thinking of Marie all the time. I keep thinking of her. And she's like, why is he keeping me next to him all the time? This is crazy. I need to escape. I can't be here. Oh, but he's really hot.
Well, she does eventually like get to see that he's working so hard for the people.
Yeah.
And because she is also a true saint. I guess we should talk about her character for a bit, because this is not so much an Otome isekai as it is like an Otome superhero story.
A lot of people I've heard have said, oh, she's such a Mary Sue, right? To which I say, that's the point?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's, yeah, I mean, welcome to isekai.
Yeah, really.
that's the whole thing.
I get the idea of, like, not wanting a Mary Sue character in, like, a normal series that you're reading. But like they set this up very early on of like, hey, look, she's going to be able to deal with all of these situations. This is not a high drama series. This is a nice, slow, simple, feel good series that you just.
Well, I guess where I say superhero is like I say superhero. And I think that's what they mean by Mary Sue. Like, is Superman a Mary Sue?
Yeah.
Because, but like, is not the point to watch somebody with extreme power be a decent person for a change? is that not supposed to be the catharsis of like Superman?
Yeah.
So I think that's her thing is, and like Mary Sue, I don't think so. Like, I don't think it really fits because she's not good at everything. And I'm going to get to a point here. She has the dreams, but the dreams only come when someone needs help. She's right. Not just good at whatever she wants to be good at. And she's the things she wants to be good at, she wants to do for the benefit of other people.
Right.
And that's like, she is a saint. And I think that's cathartic. You want to see somebody with power help people because the people she helps are sympathetic. And so the first bit of the story really builds that up. She becomes a sculptor to help somebody finish a sculpture. She becomes a composer to help somebody finish their symphony. She becomes a baker or she becomes a chef to figure out how to serve cheap meat. Like the first chunk of this series is all about situations for her to help the common people with their daily lives.
Right.
I mean, if she's a Mary Sue, Jesus Christ is a Mary Sue.
Oh, yeah. No, he is.
So take that. You want to position yourselves on that?
Okay. I mean, also an isekai, so.
Also an isekai. Oh, He's in another world right now, battling the Demon King.
I guess, was it a reverse isekai then, since he came to our world?
Yeah, I think it would be a reverse isekai. Yeah. But, so she, eventually she has to solve a dispute that winds up getting her her title. And the thing I really liked about that was, for the first time, she is not using a power she got from a dream, but knowledge she earned. She mentioned when she was shut up in that royal estate, she had nothing to do but just read the books.
I was wondering about that, because she did bring that up, but I was wondering, because she did have a dream. She had a dream about
Yeah, a farmer growing something.
Right, which is how she came up with the, oh, we should have them give us the sugar seeds, right? The sugar cane seeds. But then, yeah, after that, it's like, oh, by the way, here's some additional information that will help that I read in a book.
Yeah. If she hadn't read the book, the idea would have ended with Rachel taking credit for it.
Which the Crown Prince knew.
Yeah, he knew Rachel already was full of shit. Yeah. But they needed a follow-up. And she was able to seal the deal with her own knowledge that she earned.
Yeah.
And I liked that. Was it the best foreshadowing I've ever seen? No. The whole thing with her past is handled not so great from a writing perspective. You have to find out most of her history in like one panel flashbacks.
Yeah.
But her history is also critically important to what's going on now.
I don't know if I would say critically important. It's definitely important. The one thing that I think makes the whole Mary Sue aspect of this not matter, at least to me, is the fact that they established that she has always been a good person and has always wanted to help people. And the fact that she was in a war and got taken prisoner and all that didn't change any of that. So even though she gained a lot from this wish, this prayer that this prisoner made for her and was able to do all of these things that she couldn't before, she was very clumsy before, she's always been a really good person. She's always been striving to help people. So,
right, but you don't, like, there's no chapter dedicated to that.
Right.
You just have to get a couple of flashbacks of people saying that's what she is. Like, her whole past is told from the Crown Prince's perspective of what he's heard about this princess.
Mm.
And I don't know. Like, at some point, they're probably going to go back and show what her life was like, because she also mentions in one line that she used to sit around reading a lot, and then they have like a one panel flashback to her lying on a floor reading a book.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not enough. I'm willing to go with them on it, cause it's a light, fun comic, but like that's that pacing thing again. I feel like we've been here for a lot of time and we haven't covered some of the most important stuff in any detail.
Yeah.
But it's a fun ride. I'm not complaining too much about it. But that's where I say I think the author was still figuring some stuff out as they were writing. Because, like, the Crown Prince's character changes drastically.
Mm-hmm.
And a part of me who has written stories imagines that maybe you write the chapters and some initial feedback is, wow, that guy's a dick. I hope she winds up with silver hair. And you're like, oh, that's not what I was going for. I got to soften him.
Yeah.
It feels like that.
I do. So in season one ended at chapter 51. A couple chapters into season two, they sort of draw a line with the two male leads. where Kiel basically goes, hey, you better figure out your feelings for Marie and deal with this, or I'm going to.
I liked that. He said something like, figure out what she means to you because she could mean a lot to someone else.
Right.
And you're like, oh, my heart. Oh, Kiel.
So
I wish your name wasn't so dumb.
It is. I think, like we said before, having actually two real male leads, mm-hmm. there that's still a possibility.
Unfortunately, I know it's not going to happen. I wish I could believe she could wind up with either one.
There's
the story
part of
just
me,
focuses too much on the other guy for it to.
There's a part of me that's like, well, it would be good for everybody for her to be the Empress because it would stabilize the Cloyan region, and also she's really smart and capable, and.
It
but
would.
Then, like, for her, because she's been fearful of her life this whole time and stressed out and everything, you're like, yeah, it probably would be good for her to run away to the Satan Marquis estate and like live out her life there in peace. Like, so you can see it going either way.
Yeah. I mean, and she gets along great with the kid. Like he's basically, the other guy's basically a single dad.
Yeah.
it's,
oh, but also screw the Western emperor. Like,
oh yeah. Glasses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. So Heart Problem. Oh, that's going to end well for you.
He's a bad investment. He's
yeah, really. A heart problem. I mean, even from a romance perspective, like, he brings nothing to the table.
Except his, an empire.
His entire thing is just like, hey, she's pretty awesome. I should kidnap her.
So he's also looking for the princess. There's a Western Empire. There's an Eastern Empire or a Western Empire. And in between was Cloyan. And the Western Empire is led by a sickly but hot, like Moriarty type.
Yeah.
Who's scheming and planning and moving all these pawns around the board to try to take over the Eastern Empire. And he's also looking for the princess because if he could marry her, then he claims the disputed Cloyan region and invades and wins.
Yeah.
So he
comes in for a little while, sort of in disguise to start off, with a delegation from the Western Empire.
Yeah.
And they leave that off where he's like, I'll be back here soon enough. I'll take her then. And then, like, is just gone. And when I was rereading this, I'm like, I wonder when they're going to bring that back, because I feel like that's something that needs to happen before she's revealed to the Crown Prince, because otherwise it sort of doesn't, it won't make any sense, because as soon as she's revealed, it's going to be like within two chapters, they're going to need to be together. Right. Cause like that's the
if
whole
he wants
point.
To hang on to her, cause she's going to get kidnapped otherwise.
And so if they don't have the Western Emperor come back and try some shit before that, that's not going to really work out properly. So I feel like within the next 20 chapters or so, I think we're going to have to deal with that again.
Yeah. So I guess one issue I have, cause I read this all in one go. I read this over the last 2 days. So 59 chapters in 2 days. And it didn't feel like a lot to read.
No, it's a light read.
Yeah. So I really felt for the people I saw in the comments who were like, comment 599 days ago.
Yeah.
Of,
I saw someone that was like 800 days ago. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. You gotta, I mean, that's years.
That's when I started reading it. I mean, it was gone. Like season 1 to 2 was like, it took forever.
I would have to say, like,
oh, I have a number here. So season one ended, at least in this upload, 676 days ago.
Oh my God.
And it only came back 53 days ago.
So that's almost 2 years.
Yeah.
That's too slow.
I don't know what happened there.
Yeah. So I guess here would be my thing. Like, I could recommend reading this if it were done, or if you're going to read one season at a time and just wait for the next season to come out. But like, following this week to week would be painful.
It's not that bad.
You can't judge. You read 7,000 chapters a week.
There's most of the chapters are fairly self-contained. They're not overly short. They give you a little piece and then you wait a week and then you get another little piece, and it's not torturous. Should you read it four chapters at a time? Probably. But it's not a big deal.
With the pacing thing, though, it's like this romance is already like when it was just chapter one, I'm going to help a sculptor. Chapter two, I'm going to help a musician. Chapter three, I'm going to help a chef. That was fine. You know, that's the superhero thing. But when it starts going into the romance stuff, it's like you get a chapter where she goes on a date with, literally, she goes on a date with Silverhair Kielbasa, and then they leave off on that, and then there's another chapter where she's just doing office work with the guy, but she makes him tea. It's like there's, I don't know. What I would like to see to make it like, to make me glued to it, is I need some hint that she might choose Silverhair. And I'm not going to get it.
I think we already had that though. Like her,
she talks about going to his estate.
Yeah.
But now she's like, oh, the crown prince, if there's some way, God, could you please just let me stay by his side? Yeah, it's like, fine. He's fine. But I want the drama. I want empires to crumble.
She didn't have anything besides blushing at some of their comments for so long.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
It's she was so focused on just getting away that romance is not something that entered her mind at all. And so, like, those two were the only ones who had those kind of thoughts for the longest time.
I don't know. I feel like the best, I guess as we enter into like the meat of season two, it's going to go from focusing on the romantic feelings of the male protagonists to her romantic feelings.
Yeah.
And that's the juicy stuff. Is she going to be tempted away by Kiel?
Well, and, you know, none of this really matters.
Is she
going to
spend significant time with glasses?
The thing is like, the Prince Oscar has already claimed her, so it really doesn't matter.
I love Prince Oscar. He's got the perfect energy. I love the penguin thing. I don't know what that's about. But I guess that's for the art discussion.
Yeah, I don't know.
They like all of the, so I actually have a fairly low tolerance for like anime bullshit when it comes to art. Like I always go back to Full Metal Alchemist, where you get like a brutal and accurate story of a man killing and torturing his family, But then you get Chibi Edward running around with a dog to and screaming real loud. And it's like, yeah, could you not? What about that situation made you think, like, I should do some anime bullshit? But in this one, the anime bullshit is perfect. And I think it's because it's such a light story. It's got room to do that. There's like all this Chibi stuff where she's like, she's running around all busy and they draw her as a little chibi squirrel and she's running around like a squirrel from like tree to tree. That was cute. It worked. And when Oscar is like puffing himself up and trying to intimidate people, he's like a little emperor penguin. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. There's all of those little touches. They work in this and they don't necessarily work in other things. And it's because she did not choose to do it right after the emperor said something creepy to deflate the situation. Like, whenever the crown prince is like, I literally own you. She didn't do like a chibi reaction face.
Right.
Like, so I appreciated that. I don't know. It's the little things like that just bother me to no end.
Yeah. Well, before we move on to the rubric stuff, and we'll talk a little bit more in depth about the art in that, I did want to touch on the current arc, which has the Dauphines, right? So the Crown Princess selection.
Yeah.
Because
what an awkward situation.
It's been going on for a while. It's an important part of the story. But it's really interesting because you very quickly come to realize that neither of these two women that come in have any redeeming qualities.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So what was the, oh my God.
So Princess Ariel is the one with the black hair.
Is it Princess Turns the Hourglass or the heroine Villainous. Turns the Hourglass? Villainous Turns the Hourglass. Where, or was it like Muriel or something?
What about her?
Is that the one with Muriel? Where? Yeah. Okay. Oh God, Rachel looks exactly like Muriel.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, I was like, now maybe I'm just like, okay. In these manga, if I see a woman with long blonde hair and bangs. Red flag. She's trying to kill you. Yeah. Bangs equal crazy.
So it's interesting because they right away, they're like, okay, Princess Ariel is just going to be sort of like the classic villainous character where she's not necessarily actually like evil or anything, but she's really haughty and like looks down on people. And think she's the best.
This could be my limited, like my very limited Otome Isekai exposure. And I'm sure these are all tropes because like I know the Prince of the North now or the Duke of the North. I know all those. But man, Rachel looked like Muriel and Ariel looked like, what was her name? Like Iris or Isis or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, is this influenced by villainous or am I just reading? Am I, what's the literature term? I don't know, but there's something there. There's some literature, some professory term for that.
But then like the juxtaposition for Ariel is Rachel, who is like that kind of on the surface, nice, sweet, innocent, but behind the scenes is like conniving and like actually worse. Frankly, I like Ariel better because it's like out in the open. And also you get the idea that maybe she's just a little stupid and you could educate her. Whereas with Rachel, it's like, oh no, you're like, you have a bad heart.
You know what you're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the sin is like, Rachel is more aware of what she's doing.
But they set up Rachel as like the actual antagonist of this arc that's dare going we say on.
Villainous,
because Ariel is so out there with the ridiculous things that she's doing that she gets written off very early on.
Oh yeah, when Ariel gets put in her place by Oscar, that's the end of her as a threat.
I mean, frankly, I think her end was even earlier than that, but that was definitely sort of the most out in the open, like, condemnation.
You know what outfit I'm really into, by the way? And I've noticed this from reading so many Otome Isekais, is the riding pants, like, coat draped over the shoulders, high ponytail look.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever, like, basically whenever the heroine has to put on pants, that's what they go for. And I like it. I like it. When she sported that fit, I was like, ah, my girl, she's made it. She's business now.
Mm.
That's the business look. I'm just becoming so much more aware of, like, fashion by reading this. Like, I could tell by what they were, like, initially when I was reading these, they show up in a dress and it's, like, spotlighted or spotlit. I don't know what the past tense is.
The hero shot.
Yeah, the hero shot. But, like, the dress. I'm realizing now the dress is supposed to tell you something.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to be able to interpret that message.
As many of these as I've read, the way that people dress is the one thing that I just cannot get into. I just don't care.
Oh, I'm there. There's
so many, and this is probably blasphemous for the Otome Isekai community, but, like, because there's so many people who are all about the fashion, and that's, like, the main reason they read these and stuff like that. And I just, like, okay, I mean, sure, it looks pretty, I guess. I'm here for the drama and romance. Like,
how can you have one without the other? No, I actually unironically like it. That was something. I draw. I don't often show people my drawings, but I draw, and I've been drawing for a while, as long as I've been into comics. And, like, fashion is one of those things that does not come naturally to me as a person. I'm like hoodie and jeans wherever I go.
Mm-hmm.
But, and as a guy, you have more limited options too. Like, men have been wearing fitted suits for like 300 years, it feels like. So, I don't know. But I know there's subtle changes. Like, I could pocket square, but I'm not that advanced yet.
Triple pocket square.
But
sextuple pocket square.
Seeing, like, I guess I'm like, I sit here as a 35-year-old man and with a big old beard. I'm kind of jealous of, like, some of the Prince outfits. Mm. Like, I'd wear that if I weren't so.
Yeah,
I
couldn't pull it off, but
yeah, out of shape. if I were 7 feet tall, mostly legs, I would wear that.
Yeah. No, they're not 7 feet tall. It's just everyone around them is only like 4.5 feet tall.
That's the malnutrition of being a peasant.
All right. Well, is it time to talk about the rubric?
Yeah, let's do it. So let me pull it up.
Yeah. So we got some feedback. As normal, only Rena was the only person to give us proper feedback, which we really appreciate.
Rena at this point is like the shadow co-host.
Yeah. We love her comments. I think the main point for this is that because of the fact, so one of the points, or one of the categories that we have set up here is romance.
Yeah.
The issue with that being the romance aspect of a lot of these series, and this series is a good example, is a lot of times it's not upfront. It's either something that happens way later, or it's something that's just sort of in the background for a while and doesn't become important until later. And so having an entire category dedicated to romance, maybe not the best idea.
Well, and she pointed out that some of them don't even have a romance. Yeah. Like, it is possible. And I think that's a really fair point, because I wouldn't want to, like, I think of, when I made the rubric, I thought of this as a romance subgenre, but it's really not. And that's me limiting it. And that's me, like, not having read enough of these, which is why I wanted to solicit feedback. And I am open to it. I think she made a really good point. So my thought was, we could replace romance with basically characters, or like, yeah, a more general kind of relationship thing, because I do think all of these focus on social structures, societies, moving around in high society, manners, all that junk. And it can be a lot of the Otome Isekai stuff I've read, and again, maybe I'm wrong about this, but especially the stuff that focuses on these royals deals a lot with the politics of high society, and it's rewarding when somebody navigates them well. And it's especially rewarding when you have, like, in a Villainous Turns the Hourglass situation, was it Sarah, her Yuri bait friend?
Yeah.
When Sarah is willing to throw out the rules of high society to defend her friend, like, that's super cool. And if you can pull that off.
Except we all wanted that to be romance.
Yeah. Well, that was bait. Because, like, oh man, when they, like, zoom in, we're not talking about Villainous Turns the Hourglass. That's a whole other thing. That's a trope for the trope episode. But yeah, so I thought we could replace it with characters.
So I think the thing that I threw out there is, do we actually want to remove romance entirely and replace it with this character thing that sort of encapsulates all of it? Or do we want to pick in each series whether or not to include the romance category as well as the character relationships category? Because in a lot of these stories, the romance is basically the point.
That's a good thing.
So the question becomes, like, does that sort of screw up scoring if sometimes we have 7 categories and sometimes we have 8?
It's just 2 rubrics. I just take this rubric. This is the beauty of rubrics. I copy it. And I add a row.
So, in this case,
do we use the romance rubric or the non-romance rubric? We could have that.
I think it sort of comes down to, is the overall feeling of the series romance-based or not?
Do we think it's a romance, or is it a fantasy with romance elements?
Right. And in this case, I'm going to go with the latter. I don't think that the romance is the main point, even though it's sort of the main plot point.
It's a plot driver. Her marriage is a plot driver.
Right.
But it's her role as a saint that makes her valuable. Yeah. And in this case, to me, saint means superhero.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, Clark Kent and Lois Lane are in love. Does that make the Superman movie a romance?
No. It's just it's a romantic element.
Yeah.
So I have created. So does that mean you still want to have the romance category?
That, I mean, I'm leaning towards having romance as a separate category when the series is romance heavy.
Okay. So I'm going to say, so we've got one rubric with romance and characters. one rubric with just romance?
No, with just characters.
With just characters.
Yeah.
Okay. It's really complicated, and that's my favorite thing about rating stuff, is just making it super hard to understand. So we're going on the non-romance one.
Yes, so A Talented Maid would be a series where, even though there are romance elements to it, the romance is not a primary pillar of the story. And so
it will be evaluated under character relationships.
Right. All right. I think we can go through this then.
Okay. And I will mathematically determine how good this story is.
Yeah. Which is, you know, it's important though, because I remember when I was originally reading this, I was thinking, oh, this is so great. You know, this is an 8 or a 9 series, right? But as I've been rereading it and thinking about it from the perspective of a rubric, I was thinking, this might actually go down into like the 7s for me.
So there's, and I think we said this last time, but the main reason for a rubric is because we're doing a podcast.
Yeah.
If you're reading it on your own, the most important thing is whether or not you enjoyed it.
Well, and that's important. The reason we're going to walk through these rubrics every time and not just spit out a number is that personal preference is probably the most important category.
Yeah. Is like, if you're listening to the podcast, because this happened with Words About Books, if you're listening to the podcast to determine if you might want to pick this up if you haven't already done it, then you might want to know, separate my did I like it from is it like well done.
Right.
For example, one of my favorite movies is Hackers, a 1990s movie starring Angelina Jolie, which is one of the worst portrayals of computer science ever put to screen. Yeah. But I love it.
Yeah, something can be objectively bad and still enjoyable for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, heck, The Room. People love to watch The Room, and it is so incredibly bad. Why do they keep giving him money? They keep letting him make movies. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, I don't think they give him money. He has some mysterious source of income.
Yeah, I suppose.
Nobody's ever been able to find. But yeah, like every one of my favorite, every movie that I would put on for fun is objectively terrible. But I love it. So.
All right. So let's go through the categories and we'll discuss each one, and then we'll get a number at the end, which is the final number for how good this series is. And that can't ever be changed. And everybody has to go with that.
Okay. So the content and ideas. So this category is all about how original is the plot and the characters and the story elements, and how well executed is it?
Yeah. So this is the, I think these first two categories are the ones where when I started rereading it, I was like, oh, the numbers for these might be lower. For content and ideas, I think I'm going to go with a 3. This is, there's a lot of stuff in here that is not really original. As you said, this is a superhero story, basically. It doesn't really push a whole lot of boundaries. It's just simple feel good, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of reused elements, and that's not a bad thing.
No.
I mean, that's part of what makes it part of the genre. But yeah. Probably the most original idea here is her as a saint.
It's the original part of it is picking up skills as they become necessary, because most of the time the protagonist has the skills already and then applies them when the situation comes up.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is sort of what's happening here, but she gets it the day before instead of having it for years or whatever.
Yeah, I think where it rises for me is with the female lead. Her abilities combined with her earned knowledge, that's all really good.
Mm-hmm.
Where it falls for me is with the male lead. I think he's fine. It's fine, but it's underdeveloped and inconsistent. Now, maybe I'd be willing to give that a re-rating at the end, see if she changes my mind.
Well, with a lot of these series,
yeah,
we're rating them in the middle. It's not entirely fair.
But if you take 5 years to write a thing, you're going to get rated in the middle.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
That's the downside to that. So right now where it stands, yeah, I think this is a 3.
It's more so to say to everybody who might be mad at us for these ratings that give it some time. We'll go back to these when they finish or have had enough time to grow, and we'll redo the rubrics.
So I'd say it's not like I'm saying it's illogical.
Yeah.
It makes sense why he is the way he is. It's just telling and not showing. The execution leaves a little to be desired.
Well, and again, so at a 3, that's not bad.
Not bad. No. That's successful.
Yeah. It does what it sets out to do for the most part. It just doesn't really go beyond. It doesn't.
Yeah. And this is one
elevated.
This is a 1 to 5 scale. If you want to see the rubric, you could go to animepodcasterreincarnation.com.
Yeah.
And it'll be there.
And hey, if you have thoughts on that, if you think we're doing it wrong, let us know. Obviously, we'll change based on listener feedback.
Yeah, I mean, I want it to guide a discussion.
Yeah.
And if the people listening to the discussion feel it's a poor guide, then we can talk about that. So, next category.
Pacing and structure.
And structure.
So, unfortunately, this also has to be a lower score for me, mostly because the pacing sort of goes back and forth a lot. Sometimes it goes way too fast, and then other times it stretches things out way too long.
Yeah, I'd say it's a 3 for me,
yeah.
And that's a little on the generous side.
I'm giving it a 3 and not being generous. We're going to differ on that a little bit. I'm closer to a 4 on this. Mostly because I think even though sometimes it feels rushed and sometimes it feels like it's dragging out, most of the time it doesn't feel wrong when it's doing those.
If I had read season 1 on my own, not as part of a podcast, and then 2 years later season 2 came out, I would not have been there. I would have forgotten this existed.
Yeah, but I don't think that that's a fault of the story.
Well, my point is not enough happened in season 1 to make me want to stick around, to make me anxiously wait for a season 2.
Oh, I see. Okay.
If Villainous turns the Hourglass season 1 and season 2 were separated by 2 years, I'd remember that and I'd wait. Mm-hmm. I still remember all the characters and stuff, but that's like, this story has potential. It's just not getting there fast enough for me.
It's interesting you say that because I specifically went and tried to find out where this went multiple times in the 2 years that it was missing.
Oh, I want answers, but that's part of the problem is like, okay, at a certain point with the pacing, let's talk about what these genius manipulators of men know. They know that they are looking for a mysterious, saint-like Cloyan princess. They know that they have within their midst a mysterious, saint-like Cloyan maid who no one can find her family and no one knows anything about. And gets really cagey anytime you ask her about her last name. how many years does it take to put those pieces together? To even consider the possibility that she may be. Now, the glasses is doing it. That's progress.
Well, is he, though? He even had that little notebook he's crossing off names, and her name's not even on there.
Now, in season two, glasses is getting there. Mm. After the theft, I think he started to get there. But it's, I mean, there. I don't think the story necessarily ends when she's revealed, but, like, we got to get there.
Yeah.
At this point, every chapter where they don't figure out that she is the princess is dumb.
How can these men be so intelligent but also so stupid?
They're going to great lengths to, like, and a lot of people pointed out the hilarity of she goes to the masquerade ball and she immediately recognizes the guy from the Western Empire.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the crown prince wears a masquerade mask. She has no idea it's him.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a huge stretch. It's like, you've talked to him for how long? Does he alter his voice? Is he Batman? Is he going, "Princess, I'm looking for the princess. Hey, Marie, how's it going?" Like, what?
That might explain why everybody's so fucking terrified of him.
Maybe.
Bring me more parchment. Where's the ink going?
Okay, so, yeah, I'm giving this a 3 as well. So, I would say solid 3s. Both of them, I'm leaning towards a 4, but it can't get over that hurdle yet. So,
yeah,
but that might just be my personal preference.
Okay. Characters. So, this is where we're going to go. So, the way we're defining this, because this is new, is basically this rates how well are the characters developed? Do they have satisfying arcs and interactions? Are they well-rounded? Are they natural? Or do they feel like pawns being moved around a board? Mm-hmm. If it just feels like somebody playing like a bad game of Dungeons and Dragons, then that's a 1.
Yeah.
If every character has a satisfying arc and you care about them, that's a 5.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with a 4 on this.
I think I'm also going with a 4.
The characterization is obviously it's not perfect. We've gone over a lot of that already. But it does do a good job of, especially with Marie, of like letting you understand what she's thinking and what she's going through. And as you mentioned, it's sort of missing the backstory that you really want, but for the most part, it doesn't feel like it's necessary yet. You have a good idea of who she is, why she wants to help people. You know, she was very influenced by her mother who then passed away. And
yeah, I would say the plot pacing is lacking, but the character development is not.
Yeah.
The like, Kiel as a secondary male lead is plausible. He's sympathetic. You want him to be happy as well.
I actually think that his characterization in terms of the main characters is probably the weakest because you don't really have much of a backstory for him.
His motivations are a little unclear.
The most you get really is, "Oh, I'm loyal to the emperor." And it's like, okay, I mean, yeah, your house and everything, but like, why are you so fiercely loyal to the emperor instead of looking around and going, "Hey, the empire is doing really good under the crown prince."
Well, I would say that brings me back to Oscar though, because Kiel being a good guy, he's a simpler guy. He has his duty and he performs it. He doesn't color outside the lines the way the crown prince does to try to get.
But he does when it comes to Marie.
He does when it comes to Marie, and I like that because he gets reckless when she's involved.
Yeah,
I think I like the interactions between him and the crown prince. I like when they talk about if you aren't going to make a move on her, if you're keeping her around just so she can't be with anybody else, that's cruel, and yeah. you should stop it. I like that's a conversation I haven't seen in any of these. I've mm-hmm. seen a lot of very shallow male jealousy, but I've never seen, like, there's jealousy here, but there's also like two guys who respect each other having an adult conversation about yeah. a relationship, which is refreshing.
This never happens.
Where it's quite simply like, I understand that she's with you, but you're not able or willing to marry her, which yeah. is the right thing to do if you want to be with her. So maybe let her go.
I think Kiel has some more room to have more character development. On the romance side, I think it's developed, you know, pretty well. But
yeah.
on the actual, like, who he is as a character side, I think they can do that more. And this is sort of where some of these categories can potentially change a lot by the end of a series. Because we're in the middle, there's still plenty of time for a lot of these things to develop.
Yeah, because a big part of this is the conclusion of an arc. Sticking the landing is important
yeah.
for this category. So we haven't had a chance to see that. But what I have seen so far is Kiel has an arc, Marie has an arc, Oscar has an arc.
To some extent, yeah.
For Christ's sake. I mean, he's going... So you have the parallels of Marie and the Crown Prince are both bastard children. Mm-hmm. Oscar is not a bastard child, but... he is a basically disinherited child.
Yeah, to an extent.
The Crown Prince has taken his birthright. And nobody wants to touch him because he's a political pariah. It's the same sort of situation. And now they have a chance to help him. And he has gone from being a loner to accepting Marie's help to asserting his own authority over, you know, Ariel, which isn't a great achievement, but... There's arcs. The point is the characters are growing. They're changing. They have experienced circumstances and incorporated that into their personality and act differently as a result.
Right.
Which does not always happen.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point. The ability for a character to change how they're acting within a story, given some event that happened in that story, that's honestly not enough series do that.
It's a tough part of writing, because especially if you're writing on a schedule, because you have your outline, and then as you write it, sometimes the story wants to go somewhere else, and you have an option there of either letting the story become what it wants to become or railroading it back onto your outline.
Yeah.
And a lot of these get railroaded back onto the outline.
All right. Shall we move on to the art?
The art. Yes.
So our first category here is art competency.
Yes. So this is basically, is the art from a technical perspective good?
Yeah.
So a one would be there are just major flaws in the fundamentals, perspective, form, layout, anatomy. It's just not well composed, and the artist doesn't demonstrate a great degree of skill. Five is, you know, every frame is a painting. You would mount this on your wall just for the art alone.
I'm going to give this a five.
Walk me through it. I'm between a four and a five myself. Sell me on a five.
I think having just reread most of it, the fact that the artist knew what they were doing when they started and kept knowing what they were doing the whole time. It is super consistent. The panel layout is great. The composition is great. The character models are excellent. There's hardly any deviation on character models, even though like a lot of different things are happening and there's different angles that they use and all that. There's very little use of CGI assets, and when they are used, for the most part, it's hard to tell. There's a couple that I was like, oh, that's a CG thing. And of course, the horses are there. But I think they do a good job of incorporating them. I'm not someone who cares a ton about the art, as we've established. But when the art for a series is so consistent, it definitely sticks out to me. And it makes me happy. It's enjoyable to look at the pictures in this, which is not something that I really think about very often.
I think I can go up to a 5. I definitely get the vibe that this is the work of a professional who's been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
I haven't looked up the other stuff they've worked on.
Which is interesting because they only work on one other series.
Really?
Just be one other active series. But it is another one that I read, which is The Lady Wants to Take a Break or something like that. hold on, I can pull it up real quick. Let's
see. But yeah, you mentioned one of the things with these comics when I first came to them.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's wrong. The writer of this writes The Lady Wants to Rest. The Lady Needs a Break. The artist doesn't. There is one other thing on here, but it's not one I've heard of before. Sanho. I don't know what that is. Oh, and it's very old.
They must do something else, but maybe they just don't work on webcomics all the time.
Yeah.
Or these webcomics. But what I was going to say is when I came to this, one of the things I initially found off-putting about these kinds of comics, and I talked about it on the early episodes, is... because of all the reused assets, they tend to look cheap.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to look like a sort of scam cell phone game sometimes.
Yeah.
And like the way they're advertised doesn't help. They're kind of, all the webcomic apps are advertised in the same vein as like a shady cell phone game.
Mm-hmm.
And, over time I've come to appreciate it a bit more. Like, I understand that I'm kind of, that's an old way of thinking, that there is a reason that sometimes it's better to get something out than nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
And this helps young creators, new creators get into comics faster. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
But I agree. When it's not blended well, when the use of these stock assets is not, you can over rely on it, I think, right, is what I'm trying to say. And this does not do that. It uses them to speed up the process, but it customizes, it right, blends. And I appreciate that effort. The hand drawn stuff, no complaints. I didn't catch any. Usually I do, actually. Usually I catch at least one anatomy mistake or one weird panel or something. I didn't catch anything.
I'm sure they're in there, but
oh, yeah,
there's enough going on that none of it sticks out at all.
Yeah. Wisely, if there is something weird, it was not like center frame.
Yeah.
where the eye's focus is drawn. And yeah, I think overall there's not a lot of fancy stuff being done in this one.
Yeah.
But that's okay. It's appropriate to the story.
Which is why, for artistic flourish, I'm going to give it a 4.
I am also going with a 4. I have a reason why it's... I like the chibi stuff. And that, for me, rare by itself. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of chibi. It's one of those things in anime that I find kind of cringy. And we talk about like bringing new people into a medium. And I think chibi has gotten mainstream enough, but like, that's one of the hardest things to show somebody is like I said, you're trying to tell somebody like, oh, Full Metal Alchemist is like this really deep, dark show about human morality and philosophy and, mm-hmm, and Edward's running around screeching like a banshee and chibi-fied, and it's like, but it gets better, guys.
Yeah.
no, this, it wasn't cringe. It fit. It was cute. It was endearing. Where it kind of lost a little bit for me is I think there was a potential to do a lot more with the dreams.
Yeah.
The dream effect is just bump up the contrast, smudge the panels. and then the one thing I did like, though, is the dream look for the panels. It's consistent.
Yeah.
And then when she's when she gets her title, they use the dream effect again, but it's in reality, and it's to convey that she's having this whirlwind experience that she can't fully process, and it's disorienting.
Yeah.
And it disorients the reader as well. And I liked that. I thought that was a neat little touch. But yeah, there's room for improvement on the flourish. We could do a little more here, but I think what's done works.
Yeah, for me, I think every time they do put a flourish on something, it's well done, which is why it goes up to a 4. But I don't think that it's applied as much as it could be. I think when they do it, it's well executed. But things like lighting and shadows and stuff, it's not bad, but they could do more. And I would go back to Fantasy of a Stepmother for this, because Fantasy of a Stepmother did a artistic flourish like so well.
Yeah.
Because it applied it in basically every single frame. Whereas for this one, they didn't do it every single time.
No, and like I said, if it's a story about simplicity, you don't have to do it.
Yeah.
But like I said, the dreams are supposed to be fantastical. They could have felt more. The dreams were kind of like, they worked, but I did get the impression that there wasn't a clear vision for what the dreams were supposed to look like.
Yeah, potentially. I will say they added the flourish whenever it was important.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. So as far as like, you know, figuring out deep shadows and shading and stuff like that, like whenever it's a very serious, like a serious moment or something like that, or the crown prince is being angry or whatever, like they apply the flourish at those points and it does make it impactful. I just think it could have been done more. And so that's why it's not a 5.
Agreed. So, personal preference. This is where you get to be extremely biased.
Yeah, which, you know, it's my favorite thing. I'm going to have to give this a 5. There's not a whole lot I can do to properly explain this. And it might just be because this was a very light, fun read that I was reading at a not great time in my life. But basically, since the beginning of reading this, I was in love with it. It was a series that I always was happy when a new chapter came out. And when it stopped coming out for a while, I was really upset. And I tried to find it and like, what's going on and all that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they misquoted Sherlock Holmes, so that's a 1 for me, dog. They called paper parchment. Like, no, as a bookman, I can't go there. No, I'm joking, of course. I'd say it's a 4 from me. I would like them to get to the point.
Yeah.
Or at least a point. You know, you don't have to give away everything. I don't want the story to end. But like I'd like it to enter its next phase, and I kind of we're early days of season 2. I would have liked to see just a little bit more development in season 1. I would have liked to see season 1 end on a little bit more of a major plot resolution.
Yeah, the season end did sort of just feel like we're done for now.
Yeah. So it's a 4 for me, but this is one where I could see myself changing my mind once it's complete. We'll have to see. Because, like, a lot of the stuff I'm most looking forward to has not happened yet.
Yeah.
But I definitely, I agree, it's cozy. It's almost, like, emotionally intelligent in a way that a lot of...
Yeah, a lot of it. Especially, reading a lot of other ones that are just frustrating when people, like, won't talk to each other or something like that. This one, at least, they're not talking to each other for a good reason, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like... When you read another series and there's two characters who obviously love each other, but like they won't confess to each other and everything. It's just like, what are you doing? Like, it's so obvious.
This does have the frustrating thing of like, everything is based on one misunderstanding that if people talked about for 5 minutes, it would be better. But
that misunderstanding makes sense.
It is a life and death misunderstanding. Yeah. So.
It's like most of the time, because like the crown prince can't just be like, by the way, Marie, I'm looking for Princess Marina because I want to marry her because it's the best thing for the kingdom. Like, how does that come up naturally in conversation?
Hey, you're from Cloyne. Have you ever heard of this lady?
I mean, there is that one thing. But also, if he doesn't have an inkling that she is actually the princess... He likes Marie, so he probably wouldn't be like, by the way.
I think that's the thing, is he won't ask her because he doesn't want the answer, because he wants her and he's afraid of, it could not be her.
So. And again, I think it makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, so another one where you get to be a little biased, recommendation strength.
This is actually a tough one, because especially now... We've been recommending stuff to Kermit, and we found that
he is not a gauge for most people.
Right. But I think it's, I throw him into the mix because he's my friend. And like, so when I think about recommending this to people who I would recommend it to, he's an important person on that list. So in terms of recommendation strength, I would look at this series and I would go, I'm pretty sure he wouldn't like this.
I would agree with that.
Because it's too easy.
I think he would be bored by it.
Yeah. That said, I think any other fan of Otomo Isekai...
Well, yeah, I would give you that.
Would latch onto this so much, unless you require high drama in your series, this is going to be something that you'll like.
I think it's cozy. I don't know if it's like the one thing you need to read, but you could definitely add it to your rotation. Yeah. For this me, it's a four, which is a strong recommendation to the genre fans and a weak recommendation to general audiences. I think there's a potential for somebody who doesn't read Otome Isekai to get into this. I think the fact that it's not an isekai actually makes it a little bit more accessible.
To an extent, yeah.
Just because you don't have to know as much. I think isekai oftentimes relies on you being familiar with the tropes.
Yeah. Which is sort of the point, but... Yeah.
Yeah. Much like there's a language, a visual language to isekai, like there's a visual language to horror or something, if there's a particular sting and somebody walks off and to the center of the frame or there's a close up, there's something behind them.
Like, right.
That's, if you're not familiar with the visual language of isekai, then I think this is a good entry point.
And I think it's pretty easy. It's an easy read. So for someone who has never done manhwa before, this would be really easy to pick up.
Yeah. So let's see. Now we get to total.
Yeah. So this is the math portion of the program where we get to add all the numbers together and then piss someone off. Although I will say, no one came at us for in the last episode for our numbers for Fantasy of a Stepmother. So,
well, the beauty of the rubric is if you're doing it right, it should be pretty reasonable. Like most, if a lot of people disagree with you, the rubric's probably wrong.
I mean, we're also talking about rabid fans, so.
I think the fans of Otome Isekai are reasonable and intelligent people.
Yeah.
All right, I got my total.
I also have a total. So this ended up for me as a 75 out of 100.
Almost exactly the same, 72 out of 100.
So for 75, I believe that would be an 8.
You can go up to 8 if you want. I would go for a 7 out of 10.
I am marking it down. Score complete. All right. Well, there you have it. A talented maid. 8 out of 10.
Talented Mr. Maid.
Well, I had a good time with this. It's a series I like. I'm going to continue reading it, obviously.
I will probably wait until season 2 is complete.
I don't think that's a bad idea.
Yeah. I'll read season 2. I would read this one season by season.
And I think it's pretty easy to do that too. I think you can get through a season over the course of, you know, 2 or 3 days of fairly light reading. So. All right. So, it's now time to pick our next series. So, do you have any thoughts? Something, you know, maybe something you're interested in, or, you know, would you rather go romance heavy or mystery heavy, or are you looking for some revenge?
Maybe mystery heavy. It's been a minute.
All right, let's see here. Not a whole lot of mystery ones.
I'm also looking, so I guess it's been a while since we've done like a daughter one. I can only remember one of those.
There is, there's one that has some mystery to it that has to do with a father and daughter. However, I do hesitate to recommend this one because it's getting very sporadic updates. Let me just make sure that I'm looking at the current one. Yeah. So it was gone for a long time and it came back and the updates were very sporadic. And then it hasn't released anything in 55 days. So that might not be a great pick.
Wait, I think I started reading this one.
Villainous Lives Again is pretty heavy. We probably talked about this one before. There's like a lot going on. It's like heavily political. It's like political intrigue and stuff like that. It's a really good series. 150 chapters, though, that's quite a lot. I feel like that's one where you need to have a fairly clear schedule because you're going to have to read that one closely. Like, you can't start just a couple days before.
Are you accusing me of starting?
Have a light read.
Starting these way too late? Okay, we'll keep that. We'll put that on deck. Let's see. Well, this one's very sacrificed. What is that?
Sacrificed actually ended recently. If you want to check out something else that is over, it's not terribly long. It's not Now, there's some mystery elements to it, but I wouldn't say like mystery is the main component of it. It's almost more of, I see it has a tragedy tag. That's definitely a tragedy. There's some level of like revenge stuff going on, but yeah, I would say mostly a tragedy.
Man, there always seems to be some really spicy take for the first comment.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me look again. This is tough. Oh my God, I can read these kanji.
What are you looking at? Oh, you're down in the manga section. I think we need a little bit more clout before we jump over to manga.
Is that where things get real?
I don't know if people will follow us on the journey.
Let's see. Well, then I think maybe we should just start. We just got to start going in order. I think we got to do Solitary Lady.
Okay. And Solitary Lady has an element of mystery to it. Also somewhat revenge. It's got a bit of everything, I'd say.
I'm seeing the Tapas naming drama, The Untouchable Lady. Oh, hey, I can read these symbols too, but I think that's actually the Chinese title. Okay. Yeah, we'll do this.
All right. Solitary Lady. Let me see here. Just wanted to double check. This is rated at an 8.5 currently, so pretty highly rated. I enjoy it, so I think it's probably a good pick.
Okay. I mean, you came up with this list. You're going to have to add to this list eventually here.
I actually added one today. people might be excited for that, so I'll say the name. And if you're really interested in it, let us know. Like, we'll cover stuff that people want to.
Oh, yeah. I'm going in blind, so any advice would help, actually.
I added Not So Wicked Stepmom.
I noticed today. That one. Okay. Yeah, no, please. If anybody's listening who wants to recommend, I don't know what I'm looking at. I'm just going by the titles, which apparently Tapas plays fast and loose with and don't reflect the original text. So, yeah.
It's hard to know. You know, who has a more accurate translation?
Well, yeah, some of these, like, I mean, there's a big difference between solitary and untouchable. That's...
Yeah.
that's not, like, a synonym. So...
They're both accurate, though.
They both imply a loneliness, yeah, but for different reasons.
No, and both of those reasons are true.
Oh, she's both by choice and... untouchable.
Yeah. Well, you're gonna have to read it.
Well, now, yep, we're already getting into it. So, okay.
I would recommend starting earlier than this last time. But I don't think it's a terribly difficult. It's not super dense or anything, so you should have a good time with it.
All right. I'm in.
Well, before we go, I just want to thank Segoy Mart for partnering with us. Segoy Mart is a retailer of Japanese snacks, drinks, toys, and merch. They have a lot of cool stuff that you can't get outside of Japan. Check out the link in the description or use the code APR15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order, which also helps us out. You can always let us know what you think over on our social media. And if you tell us you have a series you want us to cover, we'll probably do it.
Mm-hmm.
You can check out our website, animepodcasterreincarnation.com, and you can leave comments there on the specific episodes. You can also find other posts and reviews of different series that we're checking out. New manga reviews are fairly popular over there. That's generally stuff that's coming out in Shonen Jump that's just started, so be sure to check those out. On the website, you can find the links to all of our social media, which includes our Patreon. We'd love to have some Patreon supporters, but we need to know what people actually want from that. So let us know. You can also find our Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. If you like the high quality stereo version, you can find that on YouTube. That gets simul-released for all of the episodes. You can also just send us an email to isekaisenseisama@gmail.com. You can, just send us your recommendation there, or you can, send me an email and tell us that you don't like what we're doing, whatever it is. Please reach out. And don't forget to rate us on your podcast platform of choice. It helps us to reach a larger audience, so we appreciate any ratings. And as always, don't forget to check out the regular podcast, That Time I Got Reincarnated, in the same world as an anime podcast. On our last episode, we did our second ever review extravaganza. Had a lot of good recommendations on there, so you should definitely check that out and maybe find some new series to check out. And if you can't get enough of Ben talking about reading things, check out his other podcast, Words About Books. They recently had some special guests on for a two-part episode.
Yes, and we were talking about the Mortal Instruments, which may have some crossover appeal with the Otome Isekai crowd. I don't know. It's a romance-ish.
Yeah. I will say there's definitely some manhwa that I've seen that might have some parallels to that in certain ways.
A little Clarion Jace drama.
Well, thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Now I've got to run. I got word about a kilo of manhwa coming in that I need to talk to my mule about.
Just double check it. We're recording, right? Because that has happened to me like 3 times now.
It says right there it's recording.
Okay. It doesn't say it on mine. That's why.
All right. No, yeah. That's my greatest fear is to like get the whole way through it and then go, oh no, it wasn't recording. It's Marina, right?
Yeah, that's how I would say it.
It was like, did not doesn't, describe.
Doesn't it mean it's right.
She like did not hide her name at all.
There's a lot of that going around. like the Prince's Sailor Moon tiara. God, I just did a podcast with two lit majors and they were talking about like cross-reading something. There's a term for that. I don't know because I'm not like an actual educated person.
I'm not sure
person.
What you're talking about.
Oh, parallel readings or something. I don't know. Comparative reading. I don't know. I'm not educated. my mule.
Never heard that term?
Oh, yeah, I have. I'm just picturing somebody shoving a kilo of manhwa up their ass.
By the way, so on Review Extravaganza, I did a super secret recommendation.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been thinking that that's something I want to do more often because there's a lot of series that are sort of just like gag series and stuff that I want to tell people about, but doesn't really work to bring up in regular conversation.
Yeah.
So today I've got one. I've got a super secret recommendation for everybody. So if you listen to the end, of course, if you're listening to this right now, you've reached the very end in the super secret section. But you should definitely tell other people that they should make sure to listen to the end. So I started reading this series recently. It's called My Stepmother and Stepsisters Do Not Pick on Me. So this is a manga, right? And you know the trope of like the Cinderella thing, right? Where the stepdaughter comes in because, the mother died or whatever. And so then you've got the evil stepmother and the evil stepsisters and they bully her and like they, kick her to the side and they're always mean and all that kind of stuff. Right. That's the normal trope. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So this series flips that on its head. The stepmother and stepsisters give the air of being evil and mean, but they're almost more like tsundere, if anything. although it's not quite tsundere. They're fairly open about
like, stepdere.
Yeah. But what's funny about it is that the female lead, the young stepsister that comes in, has it in her head that they're going to be mean to her. And so every interaction starts with, oh, they're going to hit me, or they're going to berate me, or they're going to do this mean thing to me or whatever. And they never do. And so it always flips it on its head. So it's a fun little, like, you know, very short chapters. They're like, you know, 6-7 pages long. And it's definitely a comedy, but it's also sweet and endearing and fun. And I think, you know, people should check it out. Are you looking at it right now?
It was an interesting, it's an interesting. I'll have to check it out.
And I always see like what
we're recommending.
I always like those series where they're like, "Hey, this trope is everywhere. Let's just make fun of this trope." And it's sort of like those are the kind of series that you can't really just recommend to anybody because you sort of need to be immersed in those tropes to really get the most out of it. So I hope everyone who listens to Heroin Addiction, who is definitely immersed in those tropes, checks it out.